to the floorboards. Maybe the reason there was no smell of rot was because what she had down there, anchoring her power circle, wasn't dead either. Walter growled, and Charles echoed the sentiment.
She left it alive, Anna whispered.
Yes, and likely she'll know we killed it.
Charles cleaned his knife on the sleeping bag, then put it back in its sheath.
So what do we do now?
Burn the cabin, Charles said. Most of witchcraft is potions and spells. Burning her place of power will cripple her a bit.
And release whatever poor thing or things she had trapped underneath the cabin, too. He wasn't going to tell Anna about that, unless he had to. Anna found a half-full 5-gallon can of gasoline tied onto the four-wheeler, and Charles doused the cot and then the bonfire he'd built in the middle of the floor with the witch's firewood. He sent Anna and Walter away from the building before lighting the tinder with a match. The gasoline burned his nose as the fire flared hotly to life. He waited until he was sure it was hot enough to burn the cabin before he left. He trotted toward Anna and Walter, who'd stopped some distance away. When he reached them, he caught Anna's hand and tugged her farther, urged on by the itch between his shoulder blades. Which was why they were 50 yards away when the cabin exploded, knocking them all to the ground. Anna raised her face out of the snow and spat some dirt out of her mouth.
What happened? Did she have some dynamite or something?
Charles rolled over and sat up, fighting not to show how much falling with a chest wound had hurt.
I don't know, but magic and fire have an odd, synergistic effect sometimes.
He looked at where the cabin had been and whistled soundlessly. There was almost nothing left of it, just a few rows of stone on the ground where the base of the fireplace had been. Pieces of four-wheeler and cabin were scattered almost to their feet, and the trees nearest the cabin had been splintered like toothpicks.
Wow, Anna said. Are you all right, Walter?
The wolf came to his feet and shook himself, looking into Anna's face with adoring eyes.
She knew we'd be hunting her, said Charles. She tried to hide this from us. I didn't smell any trace of her when Walter and I circled the cabin, did you, Walter?
The big wolf had not.
So what do we do?
Despite all our fears, I think it's time to call my father.
He smiled at Anna.
We're not too far from the car, and he knows something's wrong anyway. He woke me up last night. That's how I knew you were in trouble. He's not stupid, and he knows a few other witches we can call upon.
Bran had been running for several hours or so when he heard them.
I told you he was most likely to send Tack if Charles needed help, said Asil. I told you he wouldn't be such a fool as to come himself.
Bran planted all 4 feet and slid to a stop. Asil hadn't spoken loudly, but he'd known Bran would hear him, which meant it was already too late to escape. Witches could hide in plain sight if they had some sort of hold on you, and Asil was clearly not speaking to Charles. So he belonged to the witch. And he belonged to Bran. That was enough of a connection for hide-me spells to work on Bran. He turned to face Asil and found him standing on a boulder the size of a small elephant. Next to Asil, a smallish woman bundled against the cold held on to Asil as if she thought the wind might blow her off the rock.
Why he'd think that Tag would do any better than I don't know, continued Asil coolly.
There was hell in his eyes, but the rest of his face and his body language matched his voice.
Come here, senor,
the woman purred, and she facilitated their meeting by climbing down the boulder with unusual grace. She spoke with an American accent except when she spoke pure Castilian Spanish, Aristo Spanish. Part of him was interested in the fact that she'd been here long enough to pick up an American accent. His ear was too good to be fooled about which one was her native tongue, even if he hadn't known that he was hunting for a witch who had killed Asil's mate in Spain. Part of him was interested in the wolf-like dexterity she displayed as she hopped down the boulder after Asil. No human could move that well, witch or not. But when Bran's mother had enslaved him, she could move like that, too. He'd have been horrified, except that worse happened. He came to her call like the well-trained pet he'd once been, a long, long time ago. Tag, the witch purred as she walked around him. Colin Taggart. A little on the small side for a werewolf. He was aware, though she was apparently not, of the tension that held Aseel as he waited for her to discover how he'd misinformed her without ever lying. I told you he'd send Tag was not, look, there's Tag. Aseel was trying, and Bran gave him credit for it, knowing how difficult to balance a pawn was the line he was treading. From the fear radiating off of him, Aseel knew what the consequences of a witch trying to make Bran a pet might be. There weren't many people left who would remember what had happened when Bran had broken free of his mother at last. Samuel? Aseel? He couldn't think of a third. It had been a long time ago. Likely the witches themselves didn't know why it was forbidden to try to take a werewolf for a pet or familiar. Not that most of them had the power to do it. Bran would hold out for a while. First, the witch could make a mistake, especially if she didn't know whom she held. Second, he was afraid that this time no one would be able to kill him. It had been Samuel who brought him out of it before, and Samuel wasn't as certain of himself as he used to be. The control the witch asserted over him had to be won by blood and flesh, and the only flesh and blood bonding he'd done was to his own pack. She must have used Aseel to insert herself into his pack, but how? While she looked him over, he searched his link to Aseel for something that touched a witch. He paid very little attention to the witch as she talked at him. With the dexterity of a very long lifetime, Bran slid through Aseel and found a dead woman. It could only be Aseel's mate. It was an impossibility. No one could link to a dead woman. He knew that because when Blue Jay Woman, Charles's mother, died, he'd tried to hold on to her. But impossibilities became possible when you added a witch into the mix. He couldn't go exploring further. The woman was dead, and her link was through Aseel. But the only way the witch's control of him made sense was if she was tied closely to Aseel's dead mate. Then she could run her own magic through that link and take control of any of Bran's wolves. He took the time to give Aseel a cold look. Aseel would have known that the bond to his dead mate was still in place, and he should have told Bran. He had the feeling that there were more things he should have known. The witch had somehow kept the mating bond alive when she killed Sarai. He hated witches. Colin Taggart, she purred. You are mine now. Your will is mine. He felt the magic she poured at him. Some of it slid off him like honey on warm toast, lingering a bit here and there, but then it attached and solidified. As she paced around him, whispering the words of her spelling, it didn't hurt precisely, but it made him feel claustrophobic, and when he tried to move, he couldn't. Panic flared, and something stirred where he had long ago buried it. He took a deep, shuddering breath and tried to shut the witch out of his awareness. Panic was very, very dangerous, far more dangerous than this witch. So he turned his attention to other things. First, he tried to cut Aseel off from the pack. If he broke the tie between him and Aseel, he might stand a chance of freeing himself from the witch. He should have been able to do it, but the oddities in Aseel's mate bond and the way the witch had twisted it fouled the pack magic, until he wasn't certain that he could cut Aseel free of anyone. Sarai, the witch, the pack, or Bran, even with a full blood-and-flesh banishment ceremony. The beat of the witch's chant changed, and he felt her control tighten around him until he couldn't breathe. No. He tuned the witch out entirely and set about minimizing the damage as best he could. He constricted the connections he had to his pack until he could barely feel them. If he'd had a normal pack, he might have chanced dropping the reins entirely. But there were too many who could not stand on their own for long. Constricting them would help hide them from a witch's magic and make it difficult for her to use them if she tried. Through a seal, she had him, but if he could help it, she wouldn't access any more of his pack. If a seal managed to keep her thinking he was Tag, she wouldn't even know where to look. There were a few old ones whose control had become delicate. Those he gave to Samuel, cutting them from him entirely. It would be a jolt to Samuel, but the wolves knew his son and wouldn't protest. Samuel could handle them for a while. He didn't know if a witch who so obviously had some of the attributes of a werewolf would know enough about wolves to untangle what he did. But he would make it as difficult as he could. At the very least, he would slow her down. But the real reason for his urgency was so that if he went mad, he wouldn't take the whole pack with him immediately. Someone, Charles was his best hope, though Asiel might manage it, would have a chance to kill him. He finished his work before the witch finished hers. It had been centuries since he was so alone in his own head. Under different circumstances, he might have enjoyed it. He didn't fight the witch when she snapped her fingers and told him to heal. He walked at her left side while Asiel, in human form, escorted her from the right. Somehow, he didn't think that she perceived the shadow creature that almost paced beside Asiel. He wouldn't have noticed it himself if he hadn't seen the snow dent ever so slightly under Wolf's paws he couldn't see. But he could smell her, and the magic on her. Guardians, they once called such things. A charismatic name for such abominations, he'd always thought. He had been pleased when he'd heard that the family with that spell had at last been eliminated. Obviously, his information hadn't been completely accurate. Even at the peak of their power, though, he'd never heard of them making a guardian from a werewolf. Bran looked at Asiel, but he couldn't tell if the more new part of his mate accompanied them, as if she'd been called into being so often she almost had a presence outside of her creator's call. Guardians, he recalled, were destroyed every 7 years to prevent just such an occurrence. Sarai's wolf had been around for 200 years. He wondered how much autonomy she had. "Tell me, Asiel," the witch commanded, her arm tucked into the moor's, as if he were some long-ago gentleman and she a lady strolling through a ballroom, rather than 2-foot-deep snow. "How did you feel when Sarai chose to protect me, rather than stay true to you?" There was truth in her words. She believed that Sarai had made a choice. From the hesitation in Asiel's steady footfall, he heard it too.
"Was that what she did?" he asked.
"She loved me better than she loved you," the witch said. "I am her little butterfly, and she takes care of me."
Asiel was silent for a moment. Then he said, "I don't think you've been anyone's Manipotha for a long time."
The witch stopped and switched abruptly to Spanish.
"Liar! Liar! You don't know anything! She loved me! Me! She stayed with me when you went off on your journeys! She only sent me away because of you!"
"She loved you," he agreed. "Once. Now, she is no more. She cannot love anyone."
Looking out of the corner of his eye at the faint paw prints that were set into the snow so close to Asiel's hip, Bran wasn't so sure.
"You were always stupid," the witch said. "You made her send me away. She would have kept me home where I belonged."
"You were a witch, and you had no control of your powers," Asiel said. "You needed to be trained."
"You didn't send me to be trained,"
she shouted, tears glistening in her eyes as she jerked her arm free and backed away.
"You sent me to prison, and you knew. I read the letters you wrote to her. You knew what kind of training that witch provided. Linnea wasn't a teacher, she was a prison guard.
Aseel looked down at the witch, blank-faced.
It was send you to Linnea, or kill you. Linnea had a reputation for rehabilitation.
Rehabilitation? I did nothing wrong!
She stamped her foot as if she were still a child, rather than a witch fully 100 years older than she should have ever been.
Nothing? Aseel's tone was cool. You tried to poison Sarai twice. Villagers inexplicably lost pets. And you tried to pretend you were Sarai and came to my bed. I think that Sarai would have forgiven you everything except that.
The witch screamed, a wordless, almost inhuman scream of rage. And in the distance, there was an explosion. The witch froze in her tracks, then bowed her head, grabbing her temples. Bran felt her control loosen. In that moment, he attacked. Not physically. She still had control of his body. He used the bonds as she had, throwing his rage through the link to Aseel and to Sarai and beyond. If he'd had 5 minutes, or maybe even 3, he'd have broken free. He did something to the link she held to Sarai, but it wasn't enough. The witch recovered too soon. But he cost her. She pushed him out of the link and spelled the bindings to prevent him doing it again. When it was over, he was still her wolf, but she had blood trickling out of her nose.
You told me this was a lesser wolf,
she spat. And if she hadn't been so hurt, Bran thought she might have killed Aseel then and there.
And I believed you. Just as I believed you were sending me away for my own good. I should know better. He is smarter than that. When you failed, you and that other wolf, Bran would send only the best. You lie and lie as if it were the truth.
You don't want to believe me, Aseel said. But you can taste truth. Your link to Sarai is strong enough. You were a danger to yourself and us. We did it for your own good. It was that or kill you.
She flicked a trembling finger at him. Shut up!
Aseel's face lost its cool composure, and he grimaced. As he continued, his voice was breathless with pain.
What you have done is an abomination. This thing you have turned Sarai into doesn't love you. She serves you as a slave serves, without the ability to choose, just as I do. Bran is more than you can handle. He will kill you, and it is your own fault.
I won't die, she shouted at him. I didn't die when Linnea tried to kill me. She didn't know how powerful I was, or how much my mother had taught me. I killed her and her pet students and studied the book she left behind. For months I wrote to you and signed the letters from her while I studied. But I knew that I would die without protection. Even my mother died. So I took Sarai as my guardian, and she gave me her long life so that she would never live without me. You can't do that to someone against her nature. You can't! She had to love me for it to work.
Not true for the guardian spell, thought Bran, but perhaps for the binding that allowed Aseel's witch to share in a werewolf's immortality. Maybe that was why his mother had used him, rather than the pet she used to change him and Samuel.
Did you love her? Aseel asked.
Of course I loved her.
He grimaced and whispered,
I would have given my life for hers, and you stole it for yours. You don't know what love is.
Suddenly she was calm. With a queenly lift of her chin, she said,
I'll live longer than you. Come along. I have business to attend to.
She looked down at Bran.
You too, Colin Taggart. We have things to attend to.
He sent a question to Aseel, not knowing if the witch's magic would allow it. How important is it that she not know who I am? His mother had made certain that the only one he could talk to mind was her, but this witch was not of his mother's family, so it should work. The witch reached out an imperialistic hand, and Asil gave her his arm.
Now, how long do you suppose it will be before Bran comes himself?
And how many wolves will he bring with him?
Asil glanced back at Bran, and as soon as the witch couldn't see his face, he shot his eyes up to the sky, answering Bran's question. It was very important that she not know who he was.
Soon, Asil told the witch, and I don't think that he'd bring any wolves at all. Once you take him, you'll have all of his pack.
That last sentence had been meant for him.
Well then, he'd protected his pack as best he could, for now.
Good, the witch said. Let's go deal with his son and that interfering bitch, shall we? Maybe I'll prepare a present of him for Bran, a welcoming gift. What do you think he'd like best, a wolf pelt or human skin? The pelt is soft and warm, but human skin is so much more horrifying and more useful afterward. Take me to Charles.
It stirred in him, the berserker making itself felt. He soothed it and himself with the knowledge that Charles was a wily old wolf, an experienced hunter. If she hadn't taken him yet, if that explosion had been him, then Charles knew what he faced. She wouldn't take him by surprise.
Watch out, my son. The witch is after you. Run.
Charles half expected the witch to come hurrying back, but he caught no sign of her all the way back to the Humvee, which was where things quit going their way.
"Isn't that your truck?" Anna asked him.
"Yes,"
he said grimly. He opened the door and let his nose tell him what he already knew. His father had driven it here. The cab was cold. He'd come hours ago. As Tag had promised, it took only a little wandering around to find a place he could call. The phone call to Bran's cell turned up the phone in his father's pants pocket, neatly folded on the truck's seat. A call to his father's mate only established what he'd already known. His father had left in the middle of the night, and Leah didn't like Bran's younger son any the better for it. Samuel was more helpful, though Charles didn't like what he had to say. Charles ended the call after a few unsatisfactory minutes.
"You heard all that?"
"Your father knows that we might be hunting the witch who killed Asil's mate. He knows that Asil came here looking for us."
She touched his shoulder. On the off chance it might help him figure out what his father was up to, Charles gathered such magic as belonged to him as his mother's son, and reached out to the pack.
"Charles?"
He was astounded to find himself still on his feet. His head felt as if someone had clubbed him, and he had to blink a couple of times to see. All he could think was that the unimaginable had happened. Bran was dead.
"Charles, what's wrong?"
He held up a hand as he focused his attention on the blankness that had always been his link to his father, and through him the rest of the pack. What he found let him breathe again.
"Does shut down the pack bonds."
He gave Anna a smile as bleak as he felt inside.
"He's not dead. They're not gone completely."
"Why would he do that? What does it mean?"
"I don't know."
He looked down at Anna.
"I want you to take Walter and drive to Kennewick, Washington, where my brother is."
She folded her arms and gave him her stubborn look. "No, and don't try that again. I felt that push. You could be as dominant as you want, but remember, it doesn't work on me. If she's using the pack bonds, Walter and I might be your ace in the hole. I'm not going to leave you here, and you might as well stop trying to make me." He frowned at her fiercely, a look that had cowed older, more powerful people, and she tapped her finger on his breastbone. "Won't work. If you leave me here, I'll just follow you." He wasn't going to tie her up, and he had the sinking feeling that was the only way he'd be able to leave her behind. Resigned to his fate, he organized them for another trek into the wilds. They traveled light. He repacked Anna's pack with food, fire-starting equipment, and their pot for heating water. He found the pair of snowshoes that lived behind the seat of his truck in the winter. Everything else he left in the truck. "Do you think he's found her already?" Anna asked as they trudged back into the mountains, following his father's tracks.
"I don't know," he told her,
though he was afraid he did. Unless Bran really could read minds, the only way Charles could see Bran knowing the witch was using their pack magic against them was if he'd seen it for himself. He wished he knew if following his father was smarter than getting in the car and driving to southern Mexico. Part of him wanted to believe in the myth of the invulnerable Marok, but the smarter part, the part that had stood meekly answering the witch's questions, was all too aware that his father was a real person, however old and powerful. He wasn't invulnerable. Charles drew in a breath. He was bone-deep tired, and his chest hurt, and his leg. Worse than they had earlier this morning, he was not so stupid that he did not know why. His father had been feeding him strength from the pack. Even with his spare snowshoes, walking was hard. If she had Bran, Charles was no longer sure they had even a chance of saving themselves. He didn't tell Anna, not because he thought it would frighten her, but because by voicing his fears, he might make them real. She knew anyway. He saw it in her eyes.
"Watch out, my son. The witch is after you. Run."
"Now that was useful, Da," he said out loud. "Why didn't you tell me where you are, or where you're going?"
"Charles?"
"My father can talk in people's heads," he told her. "But he claims not to receive, which means when he tells you something, you can't argue or ask him for what you need."
"What did he tell you?"
"The witch has him, and she's coming after us. She has Aseel. She can find us. He didn't give me any useful information, like where they are or anything like that."
"He told you to leave."
"He told me to run."
Charles glowered at her. With the pack bonds constricted so far, his father's order had been more like a suggestion.
"Damned if I'm gonna leave him to her."
"Of course not," Anna said. "But we're going the wrong direction."
"What do you mean?"
"I think they'll be headed to the cabin we blew up."
Charles stopped and looked at her.
"Why?"
"If she asks Aseel to find us, that's where he'll go, to give us a chance to escape."
She gave him a tired grin.
"Aseel is practiced at hedging orders. I've heard the stories."
It sounded like something the old bastard would do at that. If he hadn't been so tired, he might have thought of it himself. At any rate, it was better than wandering in his father's footsteps.
Charles looked down at Walter.
"You know the fastest way to the cabin from here?"
Even as they turned around and followed Walter, Charles knew they were making a mistake. His father was right. They should run. Every instinct told him so. But as long as there was a chance to save Bran, Charles couldn't leave him to his fate. Listening to your instincts, his father liked to say, was not the same thing as being blindly obedient to them.
Anna understood the impulse that had driven Charles to try to send her and Walter to his brother and out of danger. She felt the same way. Charles was slowing down. Some of it was walking through snow that was 2 inches thick one place and hip high in others. Even with them both in snowshoes, it was hard going. Most of it, she was pretty sure, was from his wounds. Walter, still in wolf form, had taken to walking next to Charles and steadying him unobtrusively with a well-placed shoulder. When she saw Charles shiver, she stopped. Change. She knew it wouldn't help much, but the wolf had 4 legs to bear his weight instead of 2. The wolf would generate heat better than the human, and his fur coat would retain it. She knew from her own extensive experience that the wolf could function better wounded than her human form. It was a measure of Charles's exhaustion that he didn't bother arguing, but simply stripped. He stored his snowshoes, bandages, boots, and clothes tidily in some brush.
When he was naked, she could see all of his wounds clearly. They looked horrible, gaping desecrations of the smooth perfection of muscle and bone. He crouched down so he didn't have as far to fall if he lost his balance when he changed. The new view of the hole in his back wasn't as bad as the last time she'd seen it. Despite everything, he was healing. His change took almost as long as most wolves would have. The bullet hole looked odd on wolf-shaped ribs. The entry and exit wounds no longer lined up. The larger exit wound above the smaller hole. "We'll need to rest and eat before we get there," she told him. "We won't do your father any good if we're exhausted." He didn't answer her, just put his head down and followed Walter. Walter's shortcut was the roughest ground so far, leaving Anna cursing her snowshoes and the brush that caught at her bindings and hair. They were scrambling up a steep bit when both wolves stopped and dropped to the ground. Anna followed suit and tried to see what had alarmed them. Chapter 13. She hadn't told him how to find Charles, so Asil started them back toward her cabin. He'd carefully explained to Mariposa that he'd felt Charles there, that Charles might have decided to wait where he thought they would come. It was possible that Charles had done just that, so he wasn't lying to her, precisely. Bran had somehow shut down the pack links, so Asil couldn't check. But he was pretty sure Charles was nowhere near the cabin. The boy was cautious, and he had his fragile new mate with him. He'd have taken off to contact Bran before the last sliver from the cabin's explosion had fallen. The witch and Sarai's wolf was one thing, but the boy would know he stood not a chance against Asil as well. Charles should be well on his way to the cars by now. Asil didn't know the mountains here that well, but he had a good head for distances. He'd have to track him after they got to the cabin, or what was left of it. But if Charles was smart enough to drive away, the witch's search would be fruitless. Of course, if Charles found out his father was out here too, the damn fool would probably head right back into the maw of danger. He was that kind of heroic idiot. Still, it would be a while before they reached the cabin, so Asil had bought Charles that much of a head start. He didn't know what to do that might help more than that. Besides, he wanted to see Mariposa's face when she saw the wreckage. Destroying the cabin had been smart, smarter than he thought Charles was. Maybe he hadn't been giving Bran's pet assassin a fair shake. He hoped that Charles had killed the poor coyote trapped so near death, but held alive by Mariposa's will and magic. He never wanted to spend another night listening to some poor, tortured creature breathe in ragged gasps in the space beneath the floor he lay upon. It had taken him most of the miserably long night to figure out what it was. For the longest time, he'd had the terrible suspicion that it had been the lost hunter everyone had been making such a fuss over. He never wanted to watch someone cut up a live animal again, either. Never wanted to see Sarai's beloved person filled with some stranger who watched the witch as if she were her goddess and did her bidding. His Sarai would never have fetched an animal for Mariposa to hurt, would never have fetched a seal. She'd done it without orders, too. Mariposa hadn't expected him. Guardians were supposed to be obedient, incapable of thinking for themselves. He thought there was more to the wolf than Mariposa's mindless guardian. It was the same stupid hope that had led him into this mess. If only Charles's Anna hadn't been an Omega, he thought, his rage would have rendered the lore of Sarai's form useless. He felt that rage now, helpless, tearing sorrow that his Sarai's wolf had been stolen and turned into a thing. If he'd stayed with Charles, helped him figure out what to do about Mariposa, maybe they'd have had a chance. But Anna's presence had dulled his pain and left only the knowledge that whatever the witch had done to Sarai, she hadn't broken his bond with her. When the wolf who looked like his Sarai left, he'd had to follow. No, he was too old to be blaming other people for his mistakes. It had never been Anna's fault, it was his own. He was too old to believe in happy endings. The best thing he could do for Sarai was to make certain that her wolf died this time. When Mariposa had scried with water this morning and discovered a new wolf was coming, he'd known who it was. Had known what a disaster it would be if she got her hands on Bran. So when she'd asked him what other wolf Bran would send after Charles, he'd lied, and he'd lied with the truth. The next wolf Bran would have sent was Tag. Aseel didn't look at Bran, pacing beside them with all the ferocity of a golden retriever. Bran was always a deceptive bastard, gentle and mild right up until he ripped your throat out. He had many other fine qualities as well. Aseel'd been sure that even with the weakness he himself had left in Bran's defenses, the old one would somehow wiggle out. Maybe if he'd been able to give him more warning, if he'd told Bran everything when he'd first come to Aspen Creek years ago. Too late. Too late. Aseel wasn't troubled by modesty. He knew his own strengths, which were many, and he'd fallen victim to her. He didn't know why he'd managed to convince himself that Bran would be able to resist her when he hadn't been able to. At least she didn't know who Bran was. Yet. He wished it had been Samuel in the woods instead of Charles. Charles was a thug, a killer. He didn't say much, just lurked silently behind his father to inspire the terror that Bran should have been able to cause by himself if he weren't so concerned with looking like a harmless boy. Aseel'd seen Charles in action a time or two, and he was impressive. Aseel had to give him that. Charles might be strong and swift, but what they needed here was subtlety, not brawn. Samuel was old and canny, educated. Charles was a killer, who'd be half distracted by his new mate, a helpless and fragile mate. She wasn't much like his Sarai, who had been a warrior in her own right. Something brushed his hip. He glanced down, but didn't see anything, even when it touched him again. Unobtrusively, so as not to attract the witch's attention, he dropped his hand, and it landed on a furry back that wasn't there to any of his other senses. Even so, he knew what he touched. Foolishly, hope grew in his heart as his fingers closed on a silky coat he'd once been very familiar with. Can the witch change shape? Bran again, dragging him back to reality. Unfortunately, Mariposa noticed his hesitation. Is there something wrong? She asked.
A lot of things, Aseel told her.
She'd been right. He was happy to mislead her with the truth as much as he could. She hadn't yet acquired the ability of all good alphas to ask specific questions. Bran was a lot harder to deceive.
My Sarai is dead, and I am not.
He unobtrusively sampled the air and relaxed as the wilderness gave him a better answer for her.
And there is something in the trees, a large predator that is not a bear. I have heard that there are wolverines in this place.
She shrugged off the predator and quit paying attention to him. He wondered if she knew she was humming Sarai's favorite song. Did she do it to torment him with the memory of what was lost, or because she derived comfort from it? Bran waited until Mariposa was occupied with her own thoughts before he talked to Aseel again. The witch has the immortality, the strength, and the speed of a werewolf. Can she change shape, too? Is she really a werewolf, disguising her scent somehow, so she smells human and witch, but not werewolf? Or is she just borrowing from her creation? Aseel shrugged. He'd never seen her change. He looked down at the hand still buried in invisible fur. Maybe there was a chance to learn more about Mariposa. For almost 2 centuries, as soon as he realized that the mating bond gave Mariposa access to him, he'd blocked the connection as best he could. But the worst had happened. So what was the danger in it anymore? He dropped his shields, and only iron control allowed him to keep walking as if nothing had happened, as Sarai's love flooded him like an ocean wave. For a while, all he could do was put one foot in front of another. Some few mated pairs could talk to each other mind to mind, but with Sarai, it had always been emotion. Over the years, practice had allowed it to develop into something not so much different from telepathy. She was so happy he'd finally let her in, so she could drink of his energies, create herself from him rather than Mariposa. He opened himself to her so that she could do as she wished. If it had been the witch behind it, it would have been fatal, but he was confident that this was his Sarai. She sipped only a little from him as he learned from her. Sarai was dead. He'd never have her back. He understood it, because it was something this half-living shadow of his mate understood. If he succeeded in killing Mariposa, even this shadow of his mate would be gone forever. If not, she'd be trapped in this half-life that was a living hell. He understood, but part of him couldn't be bothered with the future mourning while he absorbed the joy that something of her remained to him. What? He could feel Bran's frustration and wondered how much he sensed of what he and Sarai were doing. Did he need Bran to know? Sarai thought so. So he tried to tell him.
I know now that your guardian isn't her, but she feels like Sarai. I sometimes think about what it would be like to speak to her. Just once more, he said, and was rewarded when Mariposa's nails sank into the sleeve of his white coat.
She is here. She is Sarai.
But she is mine, Mariposa said. You don't need to talk to her. She doesn't want you.
But Bran had understood. Asil could see in the thoughtful gaze his alpha turned on him. He could stop there. But Mariposa was laying claim to someone who was his.
She still loves me, Asil replied, knowing it was just going to antagonize her. Part of her does. I could see it in her eyes when she came to get me.
And what he'd seen had been real. He knew that now. Fiercely, he held the thought to him.
She came to me. You didn't send her.
She belongs to me,
the witch sounded agitated. Just as you do. She stopped as she spun the thought around and found something that pleased her. She turned to him and gave him a seductive smile.
You love me, too.
He felt her reach out to him through the bond he shared with Sarai's wolf, and felt her quiet panic that the witch would see what they were doing. She was so afraid, and he couldn't bear it. So he set out to distract Mariposa. It wasn't as if it was difficult. He bent down and took her mouth in a carnal assault. After a bare moment's surprise, she welcomed it. He had known all these years what the real basis for her obsession with Sarai was. He'd tried to tell Sarai when he'd first understood, but she wanted to see only the good in people. She thought he was too suspicious and vain, which was true enough. She thought that obscured his judgment, which was not true. She hadn't believed him when he told her that Mariposa had fixated on him until that night, the second time Mariposa had poisoned Sarai. The girl had tried to disguise herself as his mate. It had been useless, of course. She might have been able to change what she looked like, but she smelled nothing like his mate. If Sarai had been only human, she would have been dead from the poison. Instead, she'd been sick for 3 days. Mariposa had meant her to die. Only then had Sarai agreed there was something wrong with the girl that she couldn't fix. Only then had she agreed to send Mariposa away. He kissed Mariposa until she was breathless and panting, until the scent of her arousal rose in heated waves. Then he released her, wiped his mouth with the back of his hand, and told her the absolute truth.
I don't love you. I never loved you.
She heard it in his voice, felt it in his unaroused body. For a moment her face was blank with shock, and he might almost have felt sorry for her. Almost. If he didn't think about Sarai, about the poor coyote under the cabin floor, and the raccoon she'd carved to pieces and kept alive, not because she needed it alive for her spell, but because it pleased her to do so. The next moment her shock was over. She gave him a cynical smile, a whore's smile.
Maybe not, but you wanted me. I saw it in your eyes. I see it now. I am young and beautiful, and she was old and big like a cow. You wanted me, and she knew it. She was jealous and sent me away.
He raised an eyebrow at her.
You're mixing up your stories. I thought it was I who was jealous of the great love Sarai bore you. I thought I was the one who sent you away because Sarai loved you. Isn't that what you said?
Cabron!
She stomped her foot. Hijo
de puta!
Hard to believe that she was 2 centuries old and not the young girl she looked and acted. Like Peter Pan, she had never grown up.
She loved me. She chose me in the end. That's why she is with me and not with you. But,
she held up a finger,
you wanted me. That's why she made me go away. You wanted me, and it made her angry. I was young and helpless, a child in your care, and you wanted me.
Why would I want you? He asked her coldly. I had Sarai, who was more woman than you could ever be. I wanted Sarai, for Sarai I lived and died. You are never more to me than a stray pet Sarai wanted to take care of.
He let his truth ring in her ears, and when her hands came up full of magic, he made no move to defend himself. He was confident that she wouldn't kill him, not before she convinced him that she was right, or until he drove her into a real rage. Honor demanded that he fight to live as long as he could, to try to stop this threat he'd brought to the Merrok. Anything short of death, Asil could handle, and while she was concentrating on him, she wasn't paying any attention to what he and Sarai were doing, and more importantly, she wasn't paying any attention to Bran. But Sarai's wolf wasn't so sanguine. In the instant before the witch's power hit him, she flashed him pictures of things that she'd seen the witch do to people. Things that might have made him question his earlier assessment that as long as he didn't die, he'd be fine. If he'd needed proof that he was only dealing with a shadow of his mate, he'd have known it then. Sarai would have known that scaring him in advance wasn't helpful. But it did remind him that if he didn't block her out, she'd feel his pain too. And even if she was only a shadow, he didn't want her hurt. He pulled up his shields to block Sarai out just before the witch hit him with more fury than finesse. He screamed because he wasn't braced, because it hurt worse than he'd thought possible, and because his wolf decided that it wasn't going to let him just lie down and take it. Changing at that moment was as imperative as it was stupid. Pain quadrupled and sizzled down nerve endings he wished he didn't have. Time changed for him. Seconds became hours until he existed only in a limbo of agony. Then it stopped. His whole body went numb as he completed the change. It was only a moment, a space of freedom that Sarai bought him as she took his pain for him, leaving him in wolf form, standing 2 feet from Mariposa and in full control of his body. For the first time, Mariposa looked frightened, and he ate that fear as if it were fresh, dripping meat. He paused to savor it before he launched himself upon her, but that gave her 1 instant too many, because she had time to scream his mate's name.
Sarai!
And his open jaws met with fur instead of skin, with Sarai's blood and not Mariposa's. As his fangs sank deep, the pain of Mariposa's magic ripped through him again, only to stop when Bran made his move.
This stuff isn't vile, Anna told Charles. If I were, say, 5 and still enjoyed sticky, creamy, sweet things, I might actually like it.
Anna barely whispered while she munched on freeze-dried ice cream. He'd apparently convinced her that consuming calories was important. It was too bad that she fed it to Walter and him, too, though Walter seemed to appreciate it. Charles grunted as he stared down the valley at the small figures who walked across the meadow. The wind blew the occasional word their way, but it was coming from the wrong direction to alert the others that they were being watched.
"I wonder why he's doing that," Anna said, as Asil changed to his wolf.
It didn't look deliberate to Charles. Maybe it was some sort of bizarre punishment. But if so, it backfired. Asil staggered to his feet, and in the middle of it, his movements were suddenly graceful and directed as he launched himself at the witch. All three of them, Charles, Anna, and Walter, stood up. They were too far away to affect the outcome, but the thing that looked like Asil's mate's wolf just appeared out of nowhere to intercept him. And that's when his father made his move. The witch, distracted by the fight between the two wolves, almost missed it. Almost. And Charles was too far away to change what happened.
Asil felt her frustration, but Sarai couldn't ignore the prime directive of her creation, guarding Mariposa. Not yet. He hadn't given her enough. So they fought, because she couldn't stop until he was dead or the witch stopped her. Normally, it would have been no contest. Warrior she might have been, but Asil had taught her all that she knew, and in this form he outweighed her by 50 pounds of muscle. He was faster and stronger, but she was fighting to kill him. He was fighting to stay alive without hurting her. If she killed him, she would have forever to grieve, and he couldn't bear it. He felt the witch's leash fall away from him, saw Sarai hesitate as it fell from her as well. And then that moment of freedom was over.
"Asil, sit,"
Mariposa said, her voice hoarse, but the whip of her power settled over him and forced him to do as she said, leashed and held as tightly as ever.
"Sarai, stop."
She hadn't noticed that Sarai had made no move to continue her attack, because she wasn't looking at Sarai. She was still looking at Bran. Asil followed her gaze. At first he thought Bran was dead, but Mariposa staggered over to the still figure and kicked it.
"Up! Get up!"
Stiffly, it rose to its feet. The body was still Bran's, a gray wolf with a silly splash of white on the end of his tail. But when it looked up at the witch, there was nobody home. Asil had seen zombies with more personality, and if he hadn't been a wolf, he'd have used the sign his mother had taught him to ward off evil, which would have been useless. It wouldn't work unless it was made by a witch blood, and if Mariposa didn't know it, he didn't want to be the one to teach her. Even the guardian, shadow of his mate that she was, had more inside than whatever animated the Merrock. Satisfied Bran was obeying her again, she looked at Asil.
"Husan, change back to human."
Ah, Allah, it hurt. Too many changes in too few hours. But her orders were pitiless. He staggered to his feet and felt the sharp kiss of the ice crystals in the snow. Cold didn't usually bother him, less even than most werewolves, but he felt it now.
"Put on your clothes," she snapped.
They were torn and bloody, but better than standing naked in the winter winds. His hands shook, making it hard to unlace his boots. He could only find one sock, and it was so wet he didn't put it on. Blisters were the last of his worries. Asil was afraid. Terrified. No witch he'd ever seen, and he'd known a lot of them over the years, had been able to do something like that to a wolf with no more than the magic she had at hand. To a human, yes. To a dead human. He'd been making a mistake, he realized, thinking of her as the child, however powerful she had been. But she'd had 200 years to acquire knowledge and power. Cautiously, he felt down the pack ties toward his alpha and felt nothing. Had she really done to Bran what she'd done to his Sarai? 2 centuries was a long time to study and learn. Maybe she'd found a way to make another guardian for her protection, a way that took minutes instead of 4 days of torture. Then he realized that Bran himself was shutting him out, that the pack bindings were still in place. The understanding gave him hope. He looked at the Merrok again, but still saw only a dim intelligence that bore no resemblance to the man Bran had been. Was. Just to be certain, Asil examined the pack ties again, but someone was actively shutting them tight, and the only person he knew who could be doing it was Bran. But they weren't shut down entirely. Something eased out from Bran and touched him with black, cold fingers, oozing slowly into his soul. Sarai whined softly as she realized what it meant before he did. But then she'd always been better at this sort of thing than he was. He'd always thought of anger as something hot and quick. This was worse. Berserker. He had been in North Africa at the time, not even a century old, but even there, he'd heard the stories. Deathbringer. Whole villages killed, from old woman to day-old infant. There were songs and stories, most of them lost now to time. A witch had forced the change on her son and her grandson, so she could play with them. For years, she held them as pets to do her bidding. It made her the most dangerous witch in the British Isles. And then her son broke free. He killed his mother and ate her. Then he killed every living thing within miles. He found a home in the dark heart of the great Welsh forests, and for years nothing lived within a day's walk of his den. Great hunters of a generation, human, werewolf, or other, sought to win their honor or prove their courage. And they died. Some came to visit vengeance for lost loved ones. They died. Even the fools who didn't understand, who were unlucky enough to venture too close to the monster. They died, too. Then one day, or so he'd heard, Bran had walked out of the wilderness, his son at his side. No more berserker, only a harper, a teller of tales, and lone wolf. Given enough time, even the most horrific story drifts to legend. Then, nothing. Asil was pretty sure that he was the only one, except for Samuel, of course, who knew enough to understand just what it was that the witch had done. She thought she had the Merrok under her control. But then, Mariposa had always rewritten reality to suit her.
Him of Egum stood lige gelecost leot unfeir,
Asil quoted softly.
What did you say?
Mariposa was white and visibly exhausted, but her leash was strong and unbreakable.
Beowulf, he told her. Roughly translated, it is, I believe, from his eyes shone a flaming, baleful light. I'm not a poet to do the translation in verse.
She looked suspiciously at Bran, but saw only eyes so dull they were more brown than amber.
Asil knew it, because he kept looking himself. From his eyes shone a flaming, baleful light.
Grendel owed something to Bran's time as a berserker, as he did to other stories handed down over the centuries. But the lack of intelligence in his alpha's eyes and the cold, black rage flowing slowly from Bran into every werewolf tied to him was far more frightening than Grendel or Grendel's mother, those fierce monsters of the epic poem, could ever have been. He hoped that it was only infecting the immediate pack, but he was very much afraid it might spread to all of them.
Death would flow through the world as it had not since the Black Plague, when a third of Europe had died. And there would be no peace for a werewolf in this world ever again.
You are afraid, she told him, as you should be. For now I allow you to be yourself. But if you continue to trouble me, I will make you my pet as I have made him.
Pets are less useful than Sarai, incapable of responding to anything except direct orders. I had planned on making you a guardian like Sarai. You'd best be careful.